Hello and welcome to The Dive, episode number 2 of 2023.
Season 7.
Woo!
Episode 2.
First week was actually sick. It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Did you guys have some fun?
I feel like you downgraded. You went sick. Pretty fun.
It was
okay.
Happy. Yeah.
All right.
No, I thought it was really
terrible.
Good. I think they were
top now. Don't go.
How low
lower.
Can you go? Can you take it to the floor?
go back up now. Go back up.
It was amazing.
Yeah. There we go.
People are gonna think we're on crack.
Best week ever.
I thought it was a pretty good week. I don't know how you guys.
I had so much fun. I mean, the first day was super fun. Also, you know, like revealing the new stage. Yeah. I think the stage is super sick. Being actually at audience level for casting was super fun. You know, I could reach out and high five audience members.
Yep.
We'll see if it becomes a problem if they start to like peg us with oranges
beach
or something.
Ball,
hopefully
incident.
Not.
Visit yeah. it again.
I love that shot. We did it very briefly, I think, after we came back from COVID when the studio was empty. Remember we had that same kind of spot we were casting from, and then we changed it back to going up top. So I actually am really happy that we moved to that. I think it's really cool for the kind of like shots, see the stage behind the casters when we're chatting. You know, if we have to like wait for them to get ready, you can kind of see them getting ready behind us when we're talking and stuff. I thought it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of really good content stuff. The teams have put out some cool content stuff that we got to show on broadcast.
Cutie Cinderella was hilarious.
She was smurfing. The interviews were really, really funny. I liked a lot of the new things that we tried. I think Doom Scroll was actually pretty entertaining. Like I didn't see a lot
really?
Of people
talking
about it.
Oh, really? That's one I didn't like.
Oh, okay. I liked it. But like,
take it out back.
Well, I think that's fair, right?
Like, I just think it was way too long.
That's fair. But yeah. And I mean, you know, it's like it shows to each their own, right? Like some of the stuff some people are gonna like, other people aren't. But there was a lot of new stuff that got tried, and I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I think diving off on the analyst desk stuff just as a topic that's near and dear to my heart.
Diving off.
Nice. It's just been I would say somewhat disappointing amount of communication about LCS and its changes and everything that was like the reasons for times or like just so many topics to talk about, talent choices, like all these things. And I just felt like we have not done a good job communicating vision and what we're hoping to do.
We went out for Dash.
Yeah.
I think there's zero people that disagree.
There's zero people that disagree.
Communication has been bad. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's frustrating for me as someone on the desk because like I saw literally comments the day before talking about like how, oh, well, there's no analyst desk this year. So like, that's of course why Dash isn't there. And then like they're shocked when we open to waiting room and it's just the normal thing. And I'm like, why is there just no like, you know, trying to communicate with fans about like what the goal is? And that's why like I want to take a little bit of time here to at least like,
here's your soapbox.
It is my soapbox moment because I think people did eventually get it by the end.
Don't, this table cannot hold weight, please.
Oh,
what are you doing?
They taped me down. I tried to grab my microphone and stand up, but they taped it to the table or something. Damn.
They anticipated your stupidity.
They got me like a seatbelt so I can't get out of the car seat. No, I just think, you know, it's not like 100% set in stone what the exact vision of the LCS analyst zone that we're calling. I think we're going to call it the lounge. I don't know. We don't even know what we're calling it, you know, but
it's
like
the lounge,
the kids
baby.
Club.
Yeah, cool kids club.
Analyst lounge.
Losers aren't invited. Only winners on the. But we don't have like a set in stone, like this is 100% how it's going to be. But I think you at least saw a sample of like what the goal is, which is just creating more engaging content as opposed to treating it like a traditional sports broadcast where the game ends. You guys just spent an hour talking about the game. We do an interview with a pro who just was in the game. And then you go to analysts who then talk about the game again. I think that's something that generally is going to be gotten away from. Even like just pre-games, like hyping up the specific matchups and being like, this guy's got 12 kills per game. And this guy's got 8. Like, I think there's just going to be, in general, less of that and more about like getting to know a pro player, doing interesting stuff with them, getting them out of the comfort zone and trying to attach fans to personalities and teams and stuff more than like just doing heavy hitting stuff. Because if you want that, you have the dive. You have Hotline League or Dom's co-streams or like Sneaky and Media. Like there's so many people who do like a lot of analysis. It's like, yeah, that's fine. But we want to make sure that the people who are staying and watching the stream between games have really engaging content. And there's more of a focus on that, I think. And, you know, of course, we'll pivot depending on like feedback and stuff. But like that's the general goal. And I think you saw that with the Cutie Cinderella crap. You know, like that stuff was crazy. I really enjoyed it. I think it was much higher entertainment value, raw entertainment value than a lot of like older segments.
Yeah, I think and I think that's great as long as, to me at least, like the segments that can kind of get thrown in the trash are the ones where it's just like no one really cared particularly about the game. You're going to do some generic highlights. You're going to put up the pick ban. You're going to talk for a little bit and then go next.
Revenge,
right?
Like, played Cassante for the fourth time this year, and they had a good 1v1 and then they lost the game.
I hope that we don't lose like all of those like more standardized like analytical post-game segments, because as a caster, sometimes there are things that get talked in the game, but like Kobe and I know this, and you know this, I'm sure too, that it's like something really cool happens, but the game is moving on. I can't dedicate 5 minutes to talking about this thing that happened and why it's cool.
That was like really smart of this Herald swap that's
after. Or how this guy played out lane that actually won the whole game or whatever, right? Or like some interaction that snowballed the game or something cool like that. And that's where I think Analyst Desk can really shine and can have great analytical segments that are also entertaining. And those can be highlighted with like, I really loved Proto Pro last year. I really love some of the State Farm Neighborhood Tactics stuff where it's, the Telestrator segments and things like that can actually dive into one specific thing. That to me is where Analyst Desk shines, because as casters, you don't get to dedicate an entire segment to one thing.
Yeah, those are the exact things I was going to point out as well, because it's the things that make people know how cool this thing is that you didn't get to actually get the full picture of before. Yeah. Like those are really fun to do, slow-mo replaying a team fight or, tracking the jungle path or whatever.
Yeah. I think entertainment needs to be understood as not being just comedic for fans. If you hear like, we're going for more entertainment, that doesn't mean like everything's going to be a skit. Like we're just some budget.
You're going to go for some horror too, Mark?
Yeah.
Some,
there's
some drama, some romance,
heartbreak.
All forms are valid here. No, I just mean that analysis is really cool when done well. And I think like pros to that point are really good to talk about. So we had Fudge on, we had Vulcan on after their wins. Doublelift came on with Whippo, and like we ran highlights and asked them their opinion on this kind of stuff. I think there's still going to be segments where like something cool really happens in the game and we break it down, whether that's draft and picks and meta and stuff like that, but it's just less like specifically after the game, just generic stuff like you're saying. I think most of that's pretty much gone. And even some of like the pre-games where I'll admit it, like there's like middle of the season, it's two teams playing and you like limp out some like full screens of these two guys who are going up against each other with some generic B-roll packages and you go, well, I'll have to see who takes the game today. I think that kind of stuff is also probably like where fans kind of eyes glaze over. And that's the exact thing we're trying to avoid, is like that talking heads, some B-roll, some full screens, and you move on. And like,
you want it to all be engaging.
Yeah, it's engagement and like things that people are actually going to enjoy and want to talk about, rather than just like, okay, Mark made a good point about like, this is a good item build that like doesn't really connect with anyone.
Yeah, and also that doesn't happen very often, so we can't count on
those. Yeah, those are rare. You get maybe one every couple of years.
Mark has just disappeared from the broadcast. I hardly see him anymore. He just makes no good points.
It's wonderful. I love it. I'm so engaged.
Well, this last week, we also had some sad news. The disappearance, the retirement of mainstay in the LCNs since the very beginning. Afromu, one of the most influential supports of in the entire history of the LCS. So many international appearances. I mean, one of the very few times was the MSI where North America influenced the meta for the whole world.
Dictated it,
and people actually followed what North America was doing, had to do with Afromu and CLG and
Sona support.
This entire meta is actually a copy of the 2016 CLG meta.
There you go.
Yeah, genius. Afro did it
range
first.
Supports,
Afro did
cryo,
it best.
Yeah.
But, he deserves huge honors, I feel like.
Absolutely. I mean, this guy won, multiple titles in the LCS, made MSI finals, won an MVP, and has just been consistently good and I think raised the level of the teammates around him for so many years. I think that's one of the things that felt so key in his longevity, was that no matter what AD Afro was playing with, it seemed like they got better, right? Like when he played with Johnson, when he played with Neo, when he played with Doublelift, when he played with Stixxay, when he played with all these different guys, it felt like those guys, had their careers kind of elevated. And especially with a lot of them, you saw like after they stopped playing with Afro, they kind of like faded away a little bit, right? Doublelift obviously didn't, but like a lot of the other guys that he laned with, never kind of reached that same level of success. And so I always thought it was so impressive to see this guy who's like a consummate professional for 10 years, maintain a super high level. And it was like 6-7 years into his career, he won MVP. I just thought that was so impressive.
Yeah, we ran some of the stats that are just probably going to take forever to get broken. His assists record, I think it's games played, he's like just way ahead of anyone else. It's like Turtle was the closest, but he's not playing as much right now. So just feels like, all right, those are going to hold for a while. And sounds like he's moving into just like variety streaming a lot, still playing some League with other stuff. He might co-stream. I don't think he did it this weekend, but he does have access to co-streaming. So I'm sure we'll try and get him for some broadcast bits if he's still living around LA. I don't know if he moved back yet. I think he was moving.
He was talking about buying a house.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was here or where.
Yeah, because he was packing up in the video or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he wanted to buy a house in his video. I know, but I'm not sure where he was going to buy it. But
yeah.
Also, even just on a personal level, I have such like a soft spot for a lot of the like 2016 CLG guys, because so at that time, my brother, who's a big esports fan, a big league fan, he was watching a lot of LCS and he was a huge fan of the CLG guys. And so, you know, I told the CLG guys that he was a big fan. They all like got it. Like he was playing Nami as like a one trick Nami. So they got a Nami figure. They all signed the Nami figure for him. And then he came to when Toronto was, the finals were in Toronto, my brother came and we just happened to be walking back to our hotel and the CLG guys were there too. And they like came over and they chatted with them for like ages. And they're so like just such nice, genuine guys who were just like chatting with my brother, you know, as a fan, and just like really, really gave me such a good impression of like who they are as people, you know, Afro and Darshan and Huhi and all these guys who had been around for so long and just like only had good experiences with them, talking to them, only had, you know, good interactions, and you only hear good things about them as teammates as well. So definitely going to miss Afro from the league a lot.
Yeah, me too. We said last time that we are going to talk about patches in the dive and then we didn't.
And that trend will continue.
Because
get fucking bamboozled. Yeah. You punks.
Go watch Freak if you want patch notes.
Yeah. Never trust Kobe again.
Because we had to do the power rankings. So now we get to do
Surprise!
Aren't you happier now? It's like when you lose your keys and you're so sad for a while, but then the feeling when you find them.
But they're in your pocket and you're real dumb. And then it's kind of split, right? You're like, oh, it's good that I have them. But that is unfortunate. I am an idiot.
I've got the patch right in your pocket right here. So,
perfect.
And this is when the league is actually going to start playing on 13.1B. So it also works first week that, you know, LCS is actually going to be mm-hmm. on this patch when you get to see the changes in pro. Already, I've loved it in solo queue. I definitely feel like there's a lot more to deal with. But I do like a lot of the big hits. You know, and you're probably tired of me talking about Demonic. I've been talking about how OP Demonic is for almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they caught up. People started playing it on every, you know, AP, Bruiser, Champion, Zach, Udyr, Maokai, all these champs. And if it finally gets a little touch. It's actually not a super big nerf. So still a really good item, still very viable to go with all these champions. But then they also, you know, target nerf these big outliers. The Udyr and Maokai, especially for solo queue. I know I saw on Twitter just before we started the dive here, Udyr just got picked in LEC. So it's finally making this.
I saw a lot of people memeing about like, oh, finally it showed emergent. Up. Yeah.
Maokai, obviously a long main stand. Happy that one got nerfed. And then of course,
Yuumi, let's talk about it.
Okay. Go ahead to Yuumi. I was going to quickly hit.
Oh, I figured that you were leading up to Yuumi, cause this is at least like pro oriented. The one that everyone is like, thank God this thing is out of here. It's still not quite enough. There's a lot of support. Like the support meta is just absolutely whack in general. But
she is murdered. So dead though.
Yeah.
So dead.
This is taken out back.
It's really funny too because
Loop Factory.
Yeah. Freak did a video talking about it and it was very informative as far as some of the changes of a lot of his philosophy focused on, well, in pro play, a lot of Yuumi players, because the health and attack damage were so high, they can just trade with you straight up while they're off their AD carry without using the passive, jumping off anything. They're just straight up face tanking, trading you super early on. It was like, nerf that. I'm like, that is, you know, that exactly. That's a perfect target to nerf. They also nerfed the scaling by taking the AP ratio completely off of zoomies for the extra speed, which I really like because then you don't have to deal with the turbo zoomed people way later into the game, and the hidden power, unseen power of just sitting on someone, giving them so much adaptive stats, which is why, you know, all these assassins and everything were just
late game
insane. Yeah. With Yuumi on it, because you get this increase in your damage stats. Yeah. As well. So I'm really happy with these nerfs, as well as, you know, the direction of the trading early.
I'm happy, like, because I just think Yuumi's not that interesting to watch in pro, but yeah. I will say, like, this is not like a real patch change. Like, this is just deleting a character, which I assume is getting ready to rework or do some sort of redesign.
And they have already said what that redesign is. and they're fully embracing what everybody has always memed on and talked about and known since the release of The Champion, that it's supposed to be for low skill type of player, you know, your friend or whatever that you're introducing to support. So they're going to craft it as that and have really low requirements on it, but also not making it, you know, something that's going to be super crazy for pro. So they're fully, it feels like, at least from the people from the Bounce team who have posted socially, it feels like they are fully embracing that identity.
And I think that's good, right? Like, I think that the reality is certain champions are going to be impossible to balance for both pro and normal play, right? Lucian is another one that they're obviously taking a crack at. I don't know that these patch changes are really going to hit it. They're basically nerfing mana early, but increasing mana later. The idea being, this is dominating pro with Lucian Nami, but it's not actually that good in solo queue for average skill players. So, you know, they're trying to make it, you know, more kind of punishing for players to actually spend their mana early game, which is supposed to affect pro, because pro is very early game skewed based on picks and everything. Like, it is really, really early game skewed how the meta goes. So we'll see how much they hit that. The Nami changes are just like straight up flat nerfs. Plus, there are some early game nerfs for Lucian. So I think it'll be pushed out a fair bit. But I'm really interested to see how the IE changes in particular do affect things. There's the fighter item changes. There's the ADC changes. There's Grievous Wounds changes. Like, this is an enormous, enormous patch. It'll be interesting. Like, I think there's
I can already tell you, I've seen like a tenfold increase in people complaining about crits because it just puts a further emphasis on RNG. And RNG is such an interesting topic that throughout the history of League has been whittled down. They've tried to remove RNG. You know, dodge used to be in the
dodge
game. Dodge got removed. You know, all kinds of stuff.
Ripping pepperonis, 1% crit mark.
Because people, obviously, you're always going to get complained about getting crit. And it's more of an issue now that an IE, a bigger crit, is going to be available on a lower crit chance. So if you get crit, you're more pissed and you're going to be tight. You know,
a two item spike AD crits you three times in a row, that's going to win the fight.
Yeah. And so I do understand like variance complaints, but I think it was pretty necessary for how kind of bad it often felt to itemize as an AD carry, where like your third item is pen or crit, and like you can either like
blasted, so you need something defensive.
Yeah.
So like you do no damage.
Yeah. So like this tank is like running at you, and you're like, well, I can shoot you with a pea shooter 50 times, or I can make my pea shooter hit you like a little harder, but then I don't crit for anything against other people. Like, it just felt like there were so many bad choices that you had to make. Even Mortal Reminder getting armor pen slapped onto it, so that way you're going from like scaling your damage up with LDR versus like trying to make sure that people can't heal your damage. Like, I feel like that's a more interesting choice to make and stuff like that. So I find a lot of these changes more like just opening the build path more, instead of being like, you spike at three items, suck it, and realistically four.
Yeah.
And now you can make some choices like, oh, I'm snowballing, I can do this instead.
Yeah. I mean, Mortal Reminder to me was, I mean, it was just a zeal. Like, it was instead of a PD before.
Yeah.
And now it can theoretically slot it instead of an LDR or whatever, right? Like, that's the idea. But it's also interesting because to me, it's like, since they buffed the actual Grievous Wounds application on the components, I think we're going to see way less completion of the full things. Like, it's not really needed. If you wanted the upgraded Grievous Wounds before, you had to complete the full item. Now you just spend 800 gold and that's it, right? You have 40% Grievous Wounds, whether it's an Oblivion Orb, an Executioner's, or a Bramble. And
I like that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like something like Grievous Wounds should be something where you don't have to divert from what makes you feel good in a really big way to pick up what is a reactionary item. You know, you're reacting to their champs that have a lot of healing, or ocean dragons that have a lot of healing, or whatever. So at least for me, I think that this is a good spot for it to be in, where you can feel really good about just buying the component and getting back to what you actually want to build.
Well, and just the variability of like, if they're below 50%, then you get the 40%, where you have to already have this pre-chunk that just makes it like where it doesn't feel good, and then suddenly you do enough damage that it starts feeling good.
Bouncing is way easier.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, I think it's a lot better of a change to that point about like, all right, I didn't need to sink 3,000 gold into dealing with this Mundo or like whatever healing options they have. And especially since there is so much hidden healing in the game, just around like Triumph procs and like all these things that give you health back, that 25% did actually matter, but it very rarely felt like it mattered. Early game Oblivion Orb brushes aside, just in general in late game, you see those numbers start rising to like a couple thousand in the late game, but like it was just kind of like general anti-heal. And I feel like making it more targeted is better.
Well, I like the point that they made about, it's like, why didn't they just go back to 60%? But the problem is, if you make Grievous Wounds items 80%, but then healing champions have to be based around the fact that there's an 80% Grievous Wounds available. So then if there isn't a Grievous Wounds for even a split second, Mundo just heals to full, right?
Yeah. Because like that's Vlad is just perma full. Yeah.
Exactly. So like by making it 40% constant, whether it's a component or the completed item, it's more easy to actually balance lifesteal. It's more easy to balance champions like Mundo and Vladimir and so on and Soraka that are, you know, based around healing. I also think it's kind of interesting that they changed Omnivamp to just lifesteal on a lot of the Omnivamp items and stuff. So they're doing this alongside some other changes, which will be interesting. But yeah, it definitely feels like a lot at once. You know, the fighter item stuff getting changed too. You know, taking Omnivamp off some of those mythics.
Off
and
Eclipse
stuff.
was shocker to me because that's...
Eclipse looks really bad to me now. I don't know if I'm just underrating the CDR, but it seems way worse.
Yeah. I think you're for sure underrating the CDR because it's actually, if you're getting 15, it's actually a gold value increase.
Because you get the shield
Omnivamp,
more often, right?
Omnivamp, obviously, when people talk about gold values of the stats on these items, some of them are determined by like that item, you know? And so then your reference point for how much a point of Omnivamp costs is ridiculous gold, because you're using that item as the...
You will send me down a diatribe about how gold efficiency is the fakest stat in the league.
Anyway, there are some champions where some of these changes don't affect them negatively. Like there's a case where, because I was obviously, whenever there's a new patch, I'm trying to look at what junglers and primarily bruisers I'm trying to abuse as quickly as possible. Actually, I know that's what a lot of people turn into people talking about patches for anyway, is what can they abuse? And so like, you know, a champion like Xin Zhao, who actually everything you do uses lifesteal anyway because your W actually also gets 33% lifesteal. Mm-hmm. The change for Ravenous for him from Omnivamp to lifesteal is like, great! It screws a lot of other people that actually needed Omnivamp because they needed it from their abilities. But Zid is like all about his empowered Q auto attacks and W also still gets lifesteal. So like you can still, you know, abuse the power that is Ravenous. And they straight up buffed Black Cleaver, which is an amazing core bruiser item that is now going to take the place of people who were rushing Kempuk Chainsword. Which, by the way, I was going to hit this while earlier when we were talking about the Grievous Wounds things, but you know, it kept going for a super long time. The change to reduce the stats on the Grievous Wounds items and increase the effect of Grievous is very good to me. I feel like items should have a clear use and a clear direction. You know, it shouldn't be so convoluted where people are buying it regardless for, you know, stat efficiency and stuff like that. Now it's actually less stat efficient. You get more Grievous Wounds. So I love that change. But Black Cleaver is going to fill that spot. If people haven't realized it already, Black Cleaver should be rushed on Wukong, on Vi, these champions that are already pick ban and pro, or not necessarily pick ban, but in most pro games. So I feel like, especially those champions, you should get on right now, and they're just stronger. You got free extra AD on Black Cleaver, free extra HP on it. It gives you ability haste, and the armor shred is now in that area of, you know, icing.
Just always good.
Basically, because you're already going to be an AD champ if you're building this, and you're going to have an AD carry on your team if you're in solo queue, most likely. So it's going to be extremely effective for you. That's what I was targeting, as I immediately went to, who can I rush Black Cleaver on even before my mythic? I'll build Black Cleaver, then I'll build my mythic. And I think that's the way to go for this B patch for sure, at least for jungle.
Yeah, I was sad about the Eclipse getting killed for basically Aatrox and stuff because I always liked the insane healing you get with your shield proc. And like, it just felt really good on Aatrox once you got over the fact that you didn't have ability haste. So now you're getting the ability haste, but you're losing the in-combat power of hitting fatty Q2s and 3s and stuff. So you obviously Gore Drinker is the pickup. I mean, fortunately, a lot of champions who were kind of abusing Eclipse as ADs also have the fallback of Gore Drinker and stuff, but...
It's definitely way worse. Like Aatrox you're talking about, a lot of mid lane assassins as well.
Yeah.
It's just like, if you can find these use cases of a champion that somehow wiggles around some of the stat
Yeah, changes. We're bringing it back.
Then it feels good, right?
We running back Wiggle.
I was thinking of like Graves as well. I feel like the lifesteal, like the Omni Vamp on Graves was always so nice. So losing that, whereas like
he can rush Black Cleaver.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that.
I mean, Bo, who just absolutely
is good at League of Legends.
He's very good at League of Legends. You know, everybody was started building this, gore drinker Graves build. Yeah. Guess what? That got stronger because Black Cleaver just got stronger. It's buff to Graves also. Play that in the jungle. I feel like there's going to be so many, AD champions.
Speaking of
you can use. Elise is still really good, though, for AP. So
I was going to say, Lilia buffs. I love Lilia. I don't know what it is about her playstyle. It's like that comment.
How many?
I thought you were going to go very. I love Lilia. I don't know what it is about her cute little hooves.
I was hoping for that, but I could see in his eyes it wasn't going
to
happen.
I don't know. Just the way you went into it was like, I love, and then you paused.
Well, because so I was trying to think about like, why do I just enjoy champs that have like a simple, but like high, like.
That's our thumbnail.
I'm a Zoe main. I love her cute little.
our thumbnail.
So random XD. All right,
just like me.
I'll defend Lilia's voice acting and like writing is actually being kind of funny.
Watch out, Eep.
Yeah. Okay. So that's trash.
Ability name.
The ability name is a little ridiculous, but like I think her actual like characters is pretty funny to listen to in terms of voice lines. Yeah. Whenever I play her, it doesn't drive me crazy. But I really like her playstyle, actually. Just like going fast, like moving and just spacing correctly. And like, it's not a complicated playstyle, but like, I don't know. I feel like it's something that people can get really good at.
I would argue it is kind of complicated. I think like positioning based champions are actually hard to master.
Well, but like when you read her tooltips, it's not four stat Q, three plus this combo with that. Yeah. Where like a lot of the complexity of recent league champs has been, I'm going to make the tooltip a paragraph. And Lilia's are all really short. They're very easy to understand, but to your point, like the complexity comes from like just positioning and like knowing how to play.
I mean, Aurelion Sol's like whole kit was like, put some spinny balls out around you and no one can play the champion. So like.
Maybe you roam.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually an interesting topic because it's one of those cases that's kind of like how Udyr has always been. It's such a simple kit.
Yep.
And yet it has one of the highest experienced player win rates. So it's like, a lot of it is, even if you're given fairly simple-looking tools, how you're positioning, how you're roaming around the map, those types of things have a huge impact on those types of champions.
Plus the drain tanking that she kind of has in her kit with like the passive heal and stuff like that. Like I really enjoy just drain tanks. And so like when you land like a lot of your passive on people and you're healing up and you're weaving out, taking a bit of damage, going back in, or Zhonya's anger, like it just feels like a champ where there's a lot of skill expression and timing your ults and stuff and putting your entire team and the enemy team to sleep.
Well, they were definitely significant buffs. So.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about ADs? I've been seeing a lot of Twitch. I feel like Twitch, like funny enough, because like it makes this change makes the Bork build, it feels like almost even better because you can still get to IE on 3 like relatively reasonably. Whereas before it was like it would get pushed back so far. If you want to get Hurricane in, then your IE could get pushed back to like 5, or you'd have to skip your Mythic or something. Some of the like the Bork Rush champions now feel really, really nice because you can just still go Bork Rush into Mythic into IE on a lot of these champions. And it feels really, really powerful. You get that like super strong one item spike. You get sustain for lane that you want, but you still can get to your IE at a reasonable time and kind of still have that team fighting power.
Bork changes were interesting, just like the cooldown and the level 9 kick-in feels like they're trying to avoid it being quite as much of a rush. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I am just excited for the mana changes because freak, haha, no mana. Someone had to do it. There we go.
You did it very well.
Thank you.
No.
I just wanted to prove.
I'm like, if you're going to do it, he's going to do it really well, right?
No,
was the lowest effort, lowest value.
Because it's been being done for 3 weeks online already.
Yeah, so then don't do it. Do it well. And we like, we put
up it.
No.
We should
scream, you have no mana, freak. Do your best Tyler 1 impression.
We have to get assets, put up the video because it's so old.
You have no mana, freak!
Perfectly done.
That wasn't even how Tyler did it.
That was great, though.
No, I know, but I just...
But he gave the effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that he yelled hard.
I did
he
too.
Didn't do the research to look at the clip and
it's,
how
it's
Tyler
freak, you have no mana.
Though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
This is good. Excellent. I don't even know...
Azale is the nice parent. You're way nicer than me. I'm like, that was dog
but
shit.
But you just can't impress. Kobe's never happy with what...
Yeah.
What
you, A plus.
I'm very...
You hit Masters, why
happy.
Not Challenger?
Yeah.
You're a Challenger? Why aren't you on SKT? Yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what all champions are actually going to come out. The mana changes, do you want to talk about them more?
No, I mean, I just think
it does feel nice.
It feels nice. There's been a push for like champions not really being mana gated for a while anyways in a lot of roles. Like fighters are very spammy. Mages have become very spammy. And I guess in a sense, like AD carries did feel a little left behind in that world where everyone else is kind of casting their spells on cooldown. And it's just like a little pickup for I think AD carries to compete in the early game a lot of the times, just being able to throw out more abilities.
Well, and it's more like late game scaling. Most of the changes are for the mana. So, I mean, it's definitely more pushed towards the later stages, like Jinx, for example. And I mean, I just think in general, it just feels bad to take Presence of Mind, but it also feels bad to just go and like Jinx is a champion where it's like, if you're going because you're using rockets and zap and stuff. So zap at max rank, you know, that's obviously going to be quite late, but that's cut down 20 mana. The mana growth is increased 5 per level and the base mana is up 15. So some of these champions are going to be able to get a couple extra spells in you know, late game.
And early, well, so like Jinx early game was always someone I just went on all the time. She's got flat base mana. Same with Jhin mana cost changes. So it's kind of both for certain champs, but generally,
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, they talked about wanting people to be able to go towards, you know, different runes, not feel like they're forced into palm to be able to kind of like survive, which I think makes sense. And I mean, in general, it's like, I don't know, mana gating is not that interesting, but...
Especially because we have so many champions that don't have to deal with that whole part of the game.
Yep.
If you're playing a mana gated champion, you feel like you're an arcane relic of a... long ago.
Yeah, there was a time with the Dota philosophy where it's like you cast 6 spells in lane phase, you better hit them, and that's just not League anymore. Like, it's not what it is. So
I think it's interesting to have some thought to it, though, right? Like, you don't want it to be like overwhelming, especially on like poke mages and stuff like that. If they don't have to care about mana at all, it becomes just like so annoying to play against. But it's also weird if you're playing a champion like Fiora, and like Fiora will go just pushing waves in the side lane, right? And we see that even at pro level sometimes, which is in solo queue, then sometimes people are going, you know, mana flow ban and tier and going into Muramana and stuff, just to, like, not actually go pushing creeps.
Yeah.
Because that feels bad. But I do think, you know, there has to be some kind of levers. It's interesting because, like, jungle right now, it's like, basically it's impossible to go in the jungle, right?
It has been for a long time, though. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't had to worry about mana in a very long time.
Totally. And
if
I just
you ever mean, do, just go a little bit over into the jungle again.
Just stand by the trees for a little bit. But it'll be interesting because, like, if they improve the mana issues for more things, like jungle has no issues, if they improve AD issues, if they improve a couple different things, more and more people are going to feel like, well, what about me? I still care about mana. So it'll be interesting to see if that's like a philosophy that they keep moving towards. We're just like, no
screw
one
screw you, Cassiopeia.
Mana.
If Cassio is not mana gated, then we're all doomed.
I mean, you'd have to rebalance a lot of the champions, right? Yeah. Like, she'd have to just do way less damage.
Yeah. I mean, they did also give a lot just more, like, mana builds also for the mana-hungry champions with Roa not being, or Roa being reintroduced and the Seraphs not being crap anymore. So, yeah.
Rod of Ages Fiora. There you go. I never go again.
Pog.
You never
all
do
right,
any damage,
so this is
Roa,
the, this is the point where we all give our recommendations for stuff to abuse on the new patch.
I think Twitch.
Rod of Ages Fiora is Zale's submission.
Yeah, there you go.
Mine's a support Caitlyn. Karrieya pulled it off, and she just got buffs to her mana to support the support playstyle.
And surely you're just as good as Karrieya.
And you only have a limited time to play it before 13.2 comes out. We won't get too far ahead of ourselves, but all this is dead probably in the future. So get your wacky support games in now.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I'm going to take the support Kalista. Take your Hail of Blades, level one, all in, fight, flip the game, and don't play Must afterwards.
Or if you wouldn't like to lose all your LP, you could just play Zac. I feel like Zac is OP in like 4 roles right now.
So yeah. Zac also, the only thing you then have to worry about, and the reason that it's not in pro play as much, is getting invaded. But Zac got greatly benefited by the fact that invades take longer to do now. Your camps will auto clear, so it's a lot less punishing if someone leaves them behind. So a lot of the weaknesses, that's why in solo queue, Zac and Fiddlesticks, you know, those champions that have always gotten invaded, their win rates went up. Zac also doesn't really get as hurt by the demonic nerfs as Maokai and Udyr because Sunfire is almost as good on him. With the range, you know, all of his abilities are really close anyways, besides the Q. Mm-hmm. So
and if you're,
Zac is going to be super strong for a while.
And if you're worried about getting invaded, he's 55% win rate mid lane. He's 54% win rate top lane.
Oh, yeah,
he's 54% win rate support. He's literally 54 to 55% in 4 roles. He's almost the highest win rate in all 4 roles. Like, this champion can literally go anywhere except AD. So
is his lowest jungle right now? Because if all the other ones are 45 and
it
or
is,
55 and
it is the
54,
lowest.
Then it's the lowest.
It's 50. It's 50.
What have we come to?
By the tiniest amount, it's 53.97 in jungle, 54.15 in top, 55.04.
I don't care, Dale. You already told me the data supports
the support one? The
54.16. No, mid lane is the highest, and the others are basically.
I was trying to see if there was like anything to do with gold. Income, like the soul lanes were much higher, but no.
He's just really, really strong right now. Like I've fought this champion across a couple of different roles. He seems like he's the new Maokai. Like Maokai's gonna get the bonk.
That's true. Everything else.
Zach is the freelow right now, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. He definitely survived this patch. We'll see if he survives next one because they did put in the text for this patch that with the changes to the bruiser items, they're gonna keep their eyes on all bruiser champions. I don't know if they're going to, I assume they are going to also look at, you know, win rate outliers. They always have those brackets that they talk about.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, anything above 54, 55 always gets looked at.
There's also all the Grievous changes. Like maybe that hurts them a little bit. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Not enough. Definitely not enough. It does, I'm like, that's not enough. Yeah. You need to hurt him more. Zach needs to be hurt.
Samira also seems giga strong, I feel like, with the new IE change. Because I know a lot of people were talking about thinking Samira was going to be really good with that change. And when I was
Shield Bow IE rush.
Yeah, just Shield Bow IE. When I was looking through the data, with IE second, she has over 58% win rate if you build IE second on Samira. So it's like, that's pretty crazy. You're going to be able to get towards two items.
Yeah.
I hate Samira. ARAM players unite.
Better pick Lulu or Soraka.
As far as design choices, though, for items, because I do think it's a pretty interesting topic when we're talking about having a clear identity for an item. Something I have a little bit of a bone to pick because last split, I spent a bunch of Volibear. Volibear is an early game champion that rushes, or used to rush, Turbo Chem Tank. And they decided to split the identities for Sunfire and Turbo Chem Tank and make Sunfire all AD and Turbo Chem Tank 50 magic resist and nothing else, which I think just to me feels like bad fundamentals because especially if it's a rush item, now you have to meet two requirements to actually want to purchase this item, which has a really cool and unique active.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're going to make that item, that should be the identity. You're like, it's called Turbo Chem Tank. I'm not buying it.
Not 50 anti-mage magic. Butt rusher.
Yeah. And so now I'm like.
That's a great name though.
I should be naming it. Yeah.
Because especially in solo queue, no team is going, you know, super heavy AP.
Did I do good, Dad?
You did well. That was actually good.
Are you winning, son?
So, yeah. Volibear needs a little wink, but I just also like items with actives. I know that they don't, a lot of the design team does not like them because lower skilled players simply don't use the actives. And so then you get this big discrepancy between players that remember to use the actives
and
players that don't. But I think they're really fun and really unique and really cool and should have their own identity.
Well, that's also why they pulled it into a passive for Turbo Chem Tank. So, because it just goes on its own now, right?
No.
Am I trolling?
Did they make it a passive? I literally haven't bought it since.
I think.
How would it trigger then?
It's just on cooldown when you start running at people. Am I wrong?
When you just start running towards a champion?
Yeah, unique supercharger for 4 seconds grants 40% movement while facing a turret invisible enemy after.
Oh my god! They dumbed it down to not even be active anymore.
Yeah, it just goes on a 90-second cooldown once it activates.
Oh, I like it even less.
I mean, I think there's...
I literally saw that it was 50 magic resist and stopped reading it.
You just
like,
alt-F4'd the...
I
hate this, boom!
Yeah.
No, I think this... I will defend the general design of, like, people are too dumb to press their buttons, so we'll make it go on its own. It's a little weird for Turbo Chem Tank because it's such, like, a situational, like, I want to engage now. And this is probably an example where it shouldn't have done that. Combined with the magic change, don't build it.
I think that they already recognize this issue because if you look at the notes that they put out early for what they're going to do to Radiant Virtue. Mm-hmm. It used to always trigger on your ult, which is another one of these, I understand why you're doing this because people will not remember to use their active.
Redemption? I have redemption up. They make it so you can do it from the grave after.
Exactly. So they put it on something that's automatic. Turbo Chem Tank, I guess, is if you run towards someone. And Radiant Virtue was on your ultimate. But there are new changes that are not locked in or anything. So we're not holding them, you know, to these, is that it gives you the active option and it has a backup fail-safe trigger for if you get below, I think whatever they had at the moment was 15%. Mm-hmm. That I like. You know, you can put a fail-safe in there for the dum-dums that aren't going to click it, but also give me the chance to control it.
I think that they should just remove gameplay entirely, and that it's bots that play, and it's more like a sim game where I decide what they should build, and I decide what champs to draft and stuff, but I actually don't play the game.
We call it TFT.
Yo, shoot.
I heard that there are apps out there that also track enemy summoner spells. I think that's effed up.
I think I saw Dash. Now. Well, Dash had something. It didn't auto do it, but like he had like a whole like UI where it's like you click it and it gives you the time down and like everything. There's some pretty strong third party things out there.
Yeah. I'm working on some AI for my solo queue. Yep. I'm gonna get. Alpha League going.
Can I just install that the program that they made for Dota that literally was undefeated versus all Dota pros?
Sort of, but not really. But there's enough open source AI stuff that if you probably spend a couple weeks if you already have a background a little bit in programming with like all the TensorFlow and like all the open stuff, you could probably train a model if you know what you're doing relatively quick.
Because that was like 3-4 years ago, they made an AI that was just undefeated versus all the very best pros in lane.
They win in any game they choose to tackle, basically. Yeah. They've given up on games. They did protein folding. And they're just like, all right, yep. games
they're beating
us.
StarCraft 2 pros and stuff like that.
Yeah, I watched
as well.
The video of that one as well. Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, we're moving on. We're going to have a little bit of a game. So collected some hot takes from Twitter here. And y'all are going to have to react to them quickly. We're going to keep it moving.
Okay.
But with how hot or cold this take is. And maybe if I disagree, I'll get to push you on a little bit. All right, so first one here comes from Kratos. Fudge is the best Cassante in the world.
That's a very hot because I feel like that's, you know, exaggerating. Obviously, Cassante is very strong right now. So I'm going to give it think it's wrong. I don't know, hot, cold, or wrong. Can we have another answer?
It's a hot take. So you agree it's a hot take because you think it's dumb.
Okay.
Right?
That's, yeah, yeah.
My answer is it's a cold take because you can't prove it wrong. Evie's in Europe, all right? He's doing something else over there. All the LPL, LCK players are all in there.
Yeah.
For at least the next, like, 3 months, you can make this claim, and no one can prove you wrong.
Loving that logic, Mark. Cassante, Fudge definitely, probably, maybe, could be the best Cassante in the world.
And you can't say otherwise.
Could be, for sure. That to me, boom.
Moving on.
He's got, like, a 20 KDA
that's a
on
cold
it.
Take.
Who's got a better KDA than Fudge in the world right now in major regions?
All right, moving on. This one comes from All M. TSM will make playoffs. The returning trio core was vastly underrated. The Korean boot camp paid off huge, and their surprising early synergy will keep them afloat amongst Boogie performing as a top three jungler.
What's the like core of the earth? I feel like that is that hot. Like that is real hot. I like that.
Lava.
Okay, it's not the core, but it's like volcano. Once the lava gets all the way up here.
It's a couple under the crust or whatever. Okay. It's like in the mantle somewhere.
That's pretty hot. I do like that's a possible take right now, though. You know, TSM, their general manager was already tweeting at us.
Walter was, flaming
the,
up.
Wrath will be swift.
The Acadian meme.
And I was like, that's perfect. You know, you should be memeing on us because we ranked you super low.
I will say, and this is the negative Nate take, I guess, is that like in the blame game and in the dive, I think I said that like there's a world where this team picks up wins against other teams by just drafting, scaling, and going late and playing better. Like, you know, and that's kind of, they lost both early games. They had the Ornn in the second game, you know, and while the first game they did have some early game picks, it was still less early game than their opponent, I think, who had the
I ought to already say they're better than we ranked them.
I accounted for this contingency of a possibility, but like I'm still not bought in because like I don't believe that this is a good play style going forward. And their bot lane got slammed twice in the early game in the lane phase.
Our playoffs are our top six, right?
Top six.
I see. I think it's still hot.
So like that's what I'm saying is like this was a good weekend and it does show what I said, like this team can draft late and beat teams.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's enough.
Show me you can win when you can't outscale. Yeah. All right, next question.
It's not a ridiculous take though. I feel like
this one comes from Furious Jeff. Prince will set a new LCS record for kills in a single split.
That's cold.
Are we including best of threes like cheating?
Per game.
No.
Oh, per game?
I don't know. I'm just
We're going to be it. Honest. Yeah. Whatever is honest, okay?
The intention of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's that hot of a take. He could do it.
Yeah, he's extremely good already and proving it.
All right, he's smurfing. That's next cool. one. This one comes from Esteban Dador. 100 Thieves will not beat TSM this split, And if they somehow meet in playoffs, Solo will pull the clutch special and take out Bjergsen and his boys again.
Okay, never mind. That one is the core of the Earth.
That's a hot
take. That's the hottest. I like it, too, because they obviously know it, and they're getting more detailed. Have you ever heard that reasoning that the more extra details someone puts into a story, the more believable, likely it is to be actually a lie.
A lie.
Oh,
because they're trying to overcompensate.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
I was thinking that we were already like in a fantasy scenario, and like you want those little details to make it feel
it's
lived
like,
in.
Where were you, Mark? Where did you go? And you're like, well, I went to the store.
Oh, I remember I stubbed my toe.
My toe, and then there was a girl biking outside, and it's, you know.
I looked at the clock then because I stubbed my toe at exactly 9:29. So I couldn't have killed that person at 9:30, right?
TSM versus 100 Thieves is coming up next week, by the way. Nice promo. Good job.
Banger. There you go. Thanks, Esteban. All right, next one. This one comes from Lasmodan25. TL doesn't even finish top six. After watching the fall of Summit when he's in the LCS and watching Pjosic be such a coin flip, I don't see it. Love you, TL, but sorry. And they hit him with the XD.
This is maybe my favorite hot take because it's still something I won't agree with, but like, God, did they give you some ammo for this take?
This is a room temperature take.
Well, it's room temperature because it's believable.
I think it's hotter than room temperature. I would actually decrease the temperature of the earlier TSM one making playoffs because this is the same cutoff. It's sixth place, right?
Yeah.
And I doesn't finish top six, so this will be their
Yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah. But it's reverse. Yeah. And it's basically our power rankings. We all had Team Liquid fourth and TSM.
Ninth.
Yep.
And so we're basically reversing those. I think it's a similar temperature.
Yeah, I think team, and it's funny because even just the way they won and lost was equally like bad. Like I was really disappointed in Team Liquid. They reminded me, honestly, of like Curse when I was coaching with them, where like you have players that like generally win lanes and scrims, but then like you go on stage and you have to actually make your own plays and they just can't do anything. And they're all just like...
Would you lower your power ranking of them right now?
I don't think I would adjust my power rankings based off anything that happened this weekend.
Yeah.
I almost would, except that for the fact that one of my strongest reasons for putting them fourth was that they're going to outwork everyone and they have this crazy hard work schedule. So they should get better. But man, this weekend was way worse than I expected from this team.
At the end of the day, our power rankings were end of the season, and there were some scary moments for all of our rankings here.
All right, next one. We got this one comes from Fish Rhino. CLG will make finals this spring, but just fall short in the finals.
That's a good one. It is pretty hot.
Is it a hot take if like it's not a thought, it's a belief? You know, like you have a religious
hot belief.
Yeah, it's like you've been brainwashed into thinking this. It's not really a thought where you like reasoned against something.
There's no brain activity going on for this one.
It's not a thought that you had. It's a thought that was incepted.
It was like preached to you. It was a preach to you, and you just go, "Yeah, that's the truth," because they said it, and not like you argued against it at all.
I like that answer. I do like that most of these hot takes are just correctly calling out our poor placements of teams from our power
based off week one. Yeah.
Based off of week one.
Cold take, the dive is trash at power rankings.
I'm gonna take my profits though. I'm taking profits right now on rating CLG higher than you guys.
You put them sixth.
You put them sixth versus seventh.
That's why I'm taking.
You can take your profits. Those profits are like three nickels.
I'm taking profits right now, baby.
Yeah. You're selling. You won big.
Hey, give me my goddamn nickels.
if they go to finals and stuff, you're still horribly wrong. Yeah, I'm not giving you nickels for being slightly less horrible. I'm not giving them.
All right, we'll
NG
see.
Mark.
Thanks a lot for all the hot takes. I'd say we didn't go very fast, but it was fun.
He started giving explanations on all of them. So then I was like, okay, fine.
He's going to explain too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think
he was listening when we were talking about, all right, we're going to do this as a game that's rapid fire hot takes. And it's going to be 1-3 word answers. He was definitely not listening.
I was probably in the bathroom for that.
Or you were just checked out. It was fun. Keep sending us your hot takes. Actually really enjoyed this. Maybe we'll do some more of it next week. On to the LCS. We're going to hit some of the kind of like more surprises or standout teams. Maybe I'll just say standout because some of it wasn't a surprise. To start it off, we got TSM at Fly, CLG, C9, all at 2-0. 100 Thieves, EG, both at 1-1. Could be considered surprising. And TL, 0-2.
So where do you want to start?
You can start us wherever you want. You want to start at the top of the table? 2-0?
Well, I think you read it, so you got to start us.
Boom.
Yeah, TSM being 2-0, like we said, that's a surprising start for them. But I think the best part was Solo's interview after they won and him talking about the perspective from that team and how he really likes this group of guys. All of them are strong performers. They're good at working as a team. They have good relationships already. All of these sorts of things for TSM made me... That's why immediately when we started this show, I was like, I feel bad about the rating for TSM already. And I feel like that's going to be one where they're going to overperform.
They beat Immortals. I expected that. The winning over Team Liquid was a surprise. Team Liquid looks a little worse than I thought they would, given the hype around. They're like, they're doing great in scrims. But it did kind of go, like I said, to the identity that I was expecting, where it's like Ornn Azir games, and Team Liquid just was not super clean in how they approached objectives and some of the fights they picked. And like Summit's flashing into three people as the
dragons. Yeah, I give much more credit to TSM than I had in my head previously. And why I put them so low on power rankings because of their performance. Because I thought they were way more solid than.
So here's my take. I don't think they are better than 8th, 9th. I think they just got some wins that were kind of thrown their way and they happened to catch them. They drafted for late. I think that a team that, so their average gold differential at 15 was -3,102. That's not a team that is going to be towards even the middle of the standings in the league. Generally, that kind of average gold lead would put you like the very bottom of a league.
But if you're drafting for late, your average gold lead's going to be low.
It's fair, but I think this is like abysmal, right? Like they got clapped in the early games. I think they benefited from sloppy performances from other opponents, from people, sure. I think, you know, experimenting or not necessarily knowing what is strongest in the meta. I don't have any more belief than I had previous this week because of how badly they got blown out in those early weeks. And I just think that you can catch wins like that in the early weeks, which is why I actually think, I talked about this on the cast, but I think it's beneficial to play the best teams in the first weeks. You're more likely to get a random win than you are later.
Yeah, I largely agree. I think Chime was really good on the Ashe out of lane phase. The early lane phase, though, where they just got 2v2 killed, like as they were trying to get their first shove into the turret, was just pretty bad. I think you and Bwipo were like arguing about how bad it was. Like, was it the Ignite? Was it just getting crapped on, you know? Like I think some of those things, yeah, they can improve them, and like it's not like they're always going to be getting 2v2 kill, but they also had a rough early lane phase against Immortals bot lane, and like to that point about that big gold deficit, it's like you can take scaling, but sometimes people are going to be clean about closing you out, and Team Liquid's clearly not clean. Immortals is our 10th place team, so like it's not super convincing. Where
mute that or yep.
I want to see them go, like, and I think they can prove us wrong, I think, by beating some of the teams that have looked good thus far. Mm-hmm. And maybe Team Liquid just turns out to be a dud, and, like, TSM could perform better than Team Liquid, and Team Liquid just never comes together. That is possible, but I'm still not, like, playoff bound on TSM yet.
Yeah, I'm not convinced enough to change anything else. All right, so, okay, we can move on to FlyQuest, who I think... You know, we were all pretty hot on them. I think I was slightly less hot on them than you guys were. I think I had them third or second or something. You guys had them first.
We had them first. You had them third.
Yep. But, you know, I'm not like shocked by the way that they came into the league. I think Prince would be hard pressed to have had a better debut. I think that was just like, goddamn, this guy is elite, right? Like he is world caliber, one of the best in his role in the world. During the regular season, he was, you know, better than Gumayushi, I think most people would say. He was just behind Ruler. And it feels like that quality of player came over and played that quality of weekend, and that's what you get, right? Like, he's going to slap down some people. So it's going to be exciting to see if he can kind of maintain this level of dominance, but FlyQuest looked damn good.
We did it, Kobe. We saw the big names, and we said, big name, good. And we were right.
Well, I also, and I highlighted this during the cast, though, I think so many people don't give Impact enough credit. Impact is so good for the team environment inside and in the game as well for leadership.
TL plus, worse, FlyQuest better.
Plus, he's the best one to incorporate some Korean imports. Mm-hmm. And he's all, you know, Prince talked about in his interview as well. You should definitely go watch every Prince interview out there.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, him plus Impact plus Vikla, yeah.
I think Spica looked a lot better on a good team. Shocker. Like, I think people somehow thought that he wouldn't be good just because the TSM days were not great, but... You could, anyone who's been in a team environment or been around a situation like that knows that can really seriously hurt your individual performance. So I kind of wrote off last year, and he seems like he's picked up more from 2021 than 2022. And Winsome stepped in and did good. I was worried about Winsome. I did not have a very good taste left in my mouth after spring last year, but he looked a lot better. So that was really cool.
What's your descriptor for the taste that was left in your mouth?
It's like that kind of like acidic battery acid taste after after 2021.
I haven't drank many batteries myself. Have you?
Well, you're still alive. Yeah. So,
this is such a tangent.
Mark's right, like, funny story. I do drink battery acid.
No. Here's the tangent.
Wasn't going to let the cat out of the bag, but since we're here. When in Rome,
here's the story. So there was a screenshot. There's like YouTube recommended me a video of this guy who's like really big in the coffee world called James Hoffman. And for some reason, just that thumbnail, he looked like Bjergsen to me. So I tweeted at Bjergsen and I was like, hey, like, when did you become a barista kind of thing? And this guy was a world championship barista. I didn't know any of this when I tweeted. And then everyone's like, wait, James Hoffman's awesome. And then so I started watching his videos and I got really into coffee randomly this offseason because I was just super bored. And I was like, I'm going to upgrade my espresso machine. And I didn't really realize how bad my setup was until like I started learning. And so like I bought a better grinder. And like,
and then he put battery acid in coffee.
No, we're getting to the battery acid.
Oh, I ascended.
The aftertaste is...
We're getting to the battery acid. So the thing is, a lot of coffee...
Some subtle notes
we're gonna
of
have
poison.
To put espresso.
The longer you guys go, the longer the story's going to take. A lot of espresso machines, cheap ones, have fake pressurizing by only having like a little one hole at the bottom. And you use store-bought espresso grinds, which are... coarser because they expect you to have that extra pressure because the machines themselves can't generate the pressure you need for real coffee or real espresso. I didn't know that. So I bought a proper portafilter with a proper grinder and I put it in my shitty machine and it can't generate the heat and pressure needed to make real espresso. So I get battery acid out and I force myself to drink it for a month before I said I can't do it and I need to get a new espresso machine. I haven't done it yet, but yeah, I've drank battery acid and that was very similar to Winsome's aftertaste.
There you go. Perfect. All came full
circle.
But
it's much better now. It's a proper espresso now that Winsome served me.
There you go. Speaker, I wouldn't say I was like shocked by. It's like he played 2 Maokai games. He looked pretty good on Maokai. Maokai's really strong. Also, not shocked that a jungler with really good lanes looks better than a jungler who's all his lanes lost, right? Like, I feel like jungle and AD are the two roles that I feel like are most dependent on your team looking good to look good. Maybe it's not completely right, but... he looked good. Impact, obviously, you gotta sing this guy's praises. I think not even just as the shot calling type stuff, but it's really interesting because when I talked to people from FlyQuest, they were talking about how blown away they were during their boot camp by how quickly Impact was learning from other players. So they were talking about playing. I can't even remember the guy's name. I apologize, but it was a LCK Challengers League, the top laner, who was apparently giga smurfing on all the LCK laners and scrims and like smurfing on everyone. And apparently everyone was getting smacked by this guy and Impact played him and then basically just like copied every single thing that he did and started beating everyone else with it because they weren't able to pick it up as fast. And just so like there's been a lot of talk about even his individual play, not just the shot calling. Fudge was giving him so much credit in...
The rankings,
the Fudge Mountain or whatever we called it, power rankings basically for top laners. Like he just by default put himself first, and then he was talking about like how Impact's got to be there too. Summit's got to be there. He's like, well, actually, Impact's really good. Maybe he should be ahead of Summit. Maybe he should be ahead of me. You know, like he was giving me a lot of credit. So I think Impact smurfing hardcore.
Yeah, I forget which of his coaches, but one of his other coaches was like wanted to bring up how hard he works and how hard he has worked since he won the world championship every single year. You know, to keep up that drive this long is extremely impressive.
I remember Ben, I think, was flaming EG because he was like, I can't believe they let him go because we made that mistake and that was stupid. Yeah. So, like, I think everyone after you work with Impact's like, wow, what a guy.
He was actually talking about Jensen and Cloud9 getting rid of Jensen.
Same story.
But, yeah,
there you go.
The battery acid.
It's melted the brain.
Some side
CLG, talk about CLG.
That's all here, baby.
My last thing. Is this a hot take to say Impact has had perhaps like one of the like the five like top five greatest like careers like longevity wise like highest level performance over a long period of time?
You're gonna have to break out so much data for that because you're giving a wide range here, top five, and so then you have to go through and look
what's your like feeling, you know what I mean? Like when you start to think about it, it's like how many players have actually been around for as long as Impact and how many players are still like at a high level, you know, at that long of a time. It's like there's like Deft and Faker and like a couple guys who have even been playing this long.
Extremely impressive.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. I think the detractors would talk about like he moved to NA.
Yep.
And like, yeah, he made an MSI finals.
But he's been good international even when he shows up against top level
players. No, I'm with you. I understand the arguments people make against it compared to people like Zhaohu, who like maybe is not quite as a longevity, but has won in a more difficult league and blah, blah, blah. So like, I get it. I think there's a case to be made that he's top five players all time.
Yeah, I put no thought into the actual number, but I think he's had an incredible career.
Somewhere in there.
Yep.
Anyway, CLG, as I'm taking my profits now, I could
you
not
believe so much more than that, dude.
I could not put
six
them.
Out of seven.
Sixth place.
I could not put them in the top five because then people would get suspicious, and you can't. You can't show too much faith in CLG, or else they do a reverse.
Did you believe in them beating EG?
Logic. Yes, because they beat EG last year.
I predicted them. Did you predict them?
Yeah, they didn't ask us for predictions.
Oh, coward!
Yeah,
didn't tweet it. I put my money where my mouth is and said they'd beat EG.
That's actually pretty
spicy. I really do. Think that this team has been able to do what I was hoping they could and build upon last year, which no other team is keeping the same roster, so no other team, you know, has that real opportunity. But it really does look like they picked up where they left off. You know, Powell Fox was talking about in his interview, you know, it's all nice for other teams because you have a honeymoon period when you're playing with new players, mm-hmm. but they didn't have another honeymoon period, you know, starting this year, and they just picked up with the same complaints as they had at the end of last year, which doesn't sound positive, but...
No.
I think that...
Doesn't sound positive and also isn't positive.
But it gives them an immediate area to start working and to know what they want to work on. And you can pick up the little things like Contracts tweeted out after their first game, like Contracts performing on tanks, you know, big sign for them, right? Because that is obviously something that had plagued them. He's a very aggressive person, always playing dueling junglers, back-to-back Sejuani games. Those types of things, I think, are the positives that you're looking for with a returning roster.
So. Yeah.
Good.
Oh, I was going to say, just on the like picking up the grievances, we had a year between 2015 and 2016 where we kept Piglet, Phoenix, Dom, and I think it was like Lorlo in for Kwas. And anyways, it was a disaster. Like you pick up right where you left off with the hate, and like that team instantly blew up before we even got to stage. I'm pretty sure like Dardoch came in and like all that stuff, Matt and stuff. But it's cool that they have not blown up and actually won these games. Yeah. And to the point about like they went really late game against EG with like the Sivir comp, they still. It's a two-game average, of course, but it's a 1.3K gold lead at 15. Yep. So I think people might initially jump to the TSM comparison. Why are we believing in CLG and not TSM? I think it's the track record from last year looking really good, top five team from summer last year, and then actually having good early games and proactive plays. And even though they did fall behind quite heavily in that EG game, it made sense with the context of their comp being like, okay, well, we can just scale and eventually win. So, yeah, I thought they looked pretty impressive. For like, I know that we're talking about 2-0 teams. I just don't see TSM and CLG as equal, whereas I am a little bit more bought into CLG than where I rank them.
It's interesting. I mean, I think they looked good. They look good overall. I will say that if I said, when we were doing the power rankings, if there was a time for them to be hot, it would be like right out the gates. I think before other teams have really had time to gel, Dignitas looked way worse than I was expecting. That was kind of a hot mess. So, you know, they did kind of slap down Dignitas. The EG one, you know, it's hard to know. It's like, would EG have won had they gotten that smite on Soul? Like, would they be able to snowball enough? You know, how close were they to really closing out that game and making it look dominant? Because CLG came back from, I think, 10K or 9K deficit in that one and were able to win. And overall, the biggest thing that impressed me, though, was some of their coordination. Like, when I think about that bait top lane with Pooms at Ash Arrow from base and Dokla bait the enemy Vi right into it. And, you know, Contracts is there to follow it up. Like, some of that stuff was like, damn, you guys are in, you know, late season form on week one. So that really made me excited. I'm not sure how far I'm willing to like bump them up the standings because I felt like Dignitas looked like ass and they beat them. And then the EG one again was...
So they beat some ass.
EG was like, okay, EG, you went like all early game. You tried the Elise thing and you failed to close out, which doesn't shock me for an early game loss.
We'll get to EG.
Or an early season loss.
EG look a little unhinged right now. We'll get to them later, but yeah.
So I think the important thing for me is to take note of how they were accomplished, because the biggest thing from last year and one of these learnings that that this team took coming into this year was that they wanted to be more consistent.
Yeah.
And so they had a bunch of games last year, high peaks, also very low lows. And the fact that they were controlled with the scaling comp and were able to come back and successfully utilized that as a strategy and had contracts on Sejuani tank duty both games in a row.
Was Doka controlled? Because I felt like he kind of ran it in both games.
But he can't control the whole whole thing at once.
He was running it both directions.
Four fingers, the thumb is wiggling over there again.
Because he had great starts, but I felt like he gave up a lot of silly deaths in both games.
I think he kind of had that thing where you start feeling yourself a little bit and then you start running it a little bit and then you bring it back.
To his point, that's not control. That thing is
high variance, right?
Yeah. I think I have come around to people who push their limits a little bit more than they should. Like JoJo this weekend, I don't know if we want to go there
yet. JoJo had a horrible weekend, but we can finish on CLG.
Yeah, I think for CLG, I'm excited to see how they play against some of the other 2-0 teams and stuff like that when they go up against the FlyQuest and stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with them. I think the question still remains, when other teams start clicking, can they hang with them?
If I could change my power rankings, I would move them up one because I'm dumping Dignitas. My Dignitas stocks, I'm selling. I'm selling while I can still get anything for them.
Yeah. They're missing Ignar.
Yeah. But Ignar, from what I've heard, is not even going to be here for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So a lot of the regular season, if we're doing regular season power rankings, a lot of that's going to be over before he even arrives, and then they have to practice with him. So
yeah.
So I would bump them up at least one spot because I think Dignitas is in the toilet. But I'm not sure I'm willing to like fully buy in on like top four, top three for CLG yet. But great first week. All right, we got
C9,
who looked really good. I think C9 Fly, those are the two teams that people are like, damn, y'all are smurfing. How about that fudge?
The two teams that you would rank number one and number two on the power rate. I don't remember if you did also, but yeah.
Absolutely did not put them fifth.
Oh, shit, you did.
Yeah, yeah. But what I said about one through five, I was very much like, any of these teams can legitimately like win the championship. And of those teams, I think C9 would hit the ground with the most synergy of the teams I put in the top five. And
Sneaky looked pretty good switching to mid.
Yeah.
Sneaky's a collie, a little clean, huh?
Except for the early lane.
Yeah, don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Don't talk about
it. But he had to roam, to be fair.
He had to roam, and then they fixed his wave from there. He was good. Yeah, yeah. So, like, yeah, for C9, I think they've picked up where they left off from summer split, it looks like. Well, from end of summer split, because I was concerned that it might have been like a meta thing. The Cassante 2 games, it's like, okay. But yeah, I think they're really, really good. I expect them to stay 1-2-3 on top of the standings for almost the entire year, probably.
Yeah.
Whole split.
I mean, the biggest standout for me was, of course, Fudge. No surprise there. You know, I think detractors or people who are a little bit skeptical could be like, well, it was just Cassante. So we do have to see, like, different matchups, different
He's done it on enough champs now that you're like, whatever.
I mean, this was, like, peak-level Fudge, though. I feel like when you say picking up where they left off, I feel like this was a better Fudge than we saw. This was kind of, like, flashback to, you know, Fudge 2 years ago, before the role swap, when he was like at MSI playing Lee Sin top and playing all these things that he was like really just impacting the whole game on, because this felt like two back to back just Fudge v the world type games where he just takes over the whole map. So that was super, super impressive, and I think exciting to see, because you know I want to see him be able to compete against you know, some of these big name top laners, you know, someone coming in, and obviously, of course, we always have Impact and Someday and all these guys. I want to see if he can truly rise to that, like that number one spot as a young player in the league.
Yeah, that's all these are reasons why I rank them super high coming in. You know, I thought Blabber still going to be one of the best, if not you know, compete for the best jungler in the entire league. The bottom lane, going to continue to build on their synergy. They both wanted to play against each other or with each other. So very excited. The only thing I was really worried about, and I was like, oh, maybe I should switch them down. Maybe I should, you know, swap them with EG or something, is
Diplex.
And I'm still like a little bit.
So you had them at three. I had them at two. Mark had them at five. So we're the non-believer.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was the swap back and forth with 2 and 3. But yeah, I still, because mid lane got a lot stronger. So I still think if there's a place where this Cloud9 gets attacked, it is still going to be with mid lane and you know, dragging him to other parts.
And they've been vocal about that even. You know, they talked about some of these things that he's going to have to improve on. Cloud9 did a really cool offseason video with Jack and Fudge, where they talked through all their roster stuff, and they even talked about some of the weaknesses that they felt like Diplex had. But Fudge was like, yeah, he's got some clear weaknesses. You know, we got to fix this, that, and the other thing. But I believe our coaching staff, and we think our coaching staff is the best in the league, and he can fix it.
Yeah, I think they mentioned even in one of the on-stage interviews, again, Diplex's laning phase. And the reality is as well in the LCS, like laning phases mid lane don't seem to usually get exploited too hard in recent years.
JoJo sometimes.
JoJo can mess you up, but and maybe with Vikla joining and like you said, yep, some of the more difficult ones, but like I feel like a lot of the teams in the LCS, you're not going to win just because you have a better mid laner than Diplex, who is still clearly good enough to like hang for the most part. So
and a team fight.
And team fight, and thing. Then he'll get better over time and all this stuff. So definitely confident in them. They can always bring in 15 solo kills in 6 games, Emenez up if they need to. So yeah, C9 really hopeful for. 100 Thieves, one of the teams that got slapped around by C9.
Mm-hmm.
How you feeling? Heat check.
I don't know, kind of neutral, I guess. I don't think that it's like completely shocked me either way. Game one was definitely a stomp, and I think I would have started getting pretty nervous had they like had another game like that. But they came back and they looked pretty strong in the second game, I think. Absolutely. I had them fifth, so like I had them middle of the pack ish, you know, with their high end. Like I kind of agree with you. The high end for all those teams was really high. But I don't think I was really like too shocked either way. I think Doublelift had like a pretty decent weekend, which was kind of cool to see him come back, because I really wasn't sure how he was going to look. And especially after the first game, I was like, if he gets blown out in the second game, that would look pretty rough.
I really appreciate also him just doing a recap of his weekend, watching the Sneaky Meteo stream. I think that's like exactly the kind of stuff I want this year with people making content. Is like, I know there's some pros who still stream, you know, like Dokla streams and stuff like that. But in terms of like really big brand names, like Blabber doesn't really stream, JoJo doesn't stream,
Fudge doesn't stream.
There's like a lot of superstars that we've been trying to build up for years, and it just doesn't feel like they, I don't want to like flame them because they're trying hard in scrims and stuff, but like they don't do like the PR side of it. And Doublelift does. And
the entertainer.
Yeah, they're not entertainers really. They talk their smack when you put a microphone in front of them, and then they're happy to go back to like the practice room or whatever. And so I'm so glad Doublelift is back, just like roasting himself, roasting his team, roasting other people. Like
roasting the draft.
Yeah, just like the recap itself was also just very insightful as well about like things he felt like he could have done. Like in that first game, he's like, well, we have Jax and DeCasante. That feels like where our jungler's attention should go. And he's like, I'm just getting back into the flow of the game, and like we were actually winning bot lane, and I realized I should have called closer down more often to actually snowball bot lane, but I didn't feel confident doing that right then. And just like hearing his thought process about what's going wrong is just so insightful for fans and even us to just be like, oh yeah, okay, cool. And yeah, I love it.
It's until like when we don't have any of that, you don't really know what you're missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get it back, you're like, oh my god, what if all the teams, you know, had, you know, outspoken.
There's no battery acid in this coffee. It's delicious.
Player who did it, because it was really fun too to get him. He addressed most of the topics that people had after the first game. You know, the Azir support. He was like, yeah, I mean, you know, it didn't look like it accomplished, you know, as much as it could have. We were in a position where we were stomping lane. We could have done more with it. Yeah, there were other problems with, you know, no other sources of peel. We didn't have anything to kill the Cassante. But I have faith in letting Busio play these types of champions. I'm trying not to say Cook anymore because Cook is getting so overused.
Yeah. Let it bake. He was, stir fry.
Yeah,
deep fry.
Let it
brew. He's referencing, you know, Karia, and he's like, well, we don't want him to go to those, you know, maybe not so far. You know, some of the things we'll rein him back in on, but he does have confidence. He's like, I still have confidence in Busio and these picks, and let him do what he wants to do with some of these things, because winning bottom lane can be so much more influential than a lot of games that we actually see. You know, a lot of games will be a winning bottom lane and they don't do much with it. And he doesn't want to be that. He wants to be the winning bottom lane that has the big effect on the game.
I mean, I think especially with the patch coming up, you know, if you slam bot and you get a quick 2-item IE and you start team fighting,
everyone is already talking about it in solo queue, at least. Everyone's like, well, I guess I have to always path bottom now. And you know, if I'm not getting bottom ahead, then what am I doing with my life?
You know, something also that was really interesting. I mean, Doublelift always brings the spice, and he's going to give you his honest thoughts, whether they're hot take or not, right? I think it was his little VOD review thing that he did with Bippo, where he was getting asked about, I want to say it was Bippo, was getting asked about what he thought about the other ADs coming back into the league and stuff. And he basically said, not impressed.
Except for Yawn.
He said he thought Yawn impressed him, but they're like, oh, what about Berserker? What about Prince and stuff? He's like, they're good players, but like basically like not impressed. Like they didn't blow me away. They weren't as good as he thought they were gonna be. You know, he said that he thought he was just gonna be getting blown out by these guys, and like basically it wasn't happening. So, you know, it's nice to see him getting some of that confidence back and stuff, because it's like when like one of the GOATs comes kind of like out of retirement or whatever you want to call it, you want to see them perform, right? You don't want like Michael Jordan on the Wizards. You want Michael Jordan on the Bulls again. So
what was really interesting, this is a small tangent, was so many players in their interviews said that they were really nervous. And I think Everyone's always a little nervous on opening day, of course, and all this stuff, but it felt a lot more than normal and people were more open about it. Like I think Solo said it. I think Fudge might have said it. I think Doublelift said it. Like just a handful of people, both young players and older players, were being like, yeah, I was like actually freaking out before the game, which was a little surprising to me. I don't know exactly what brought it on. Maybe it's just like a lot of things, like
probably
the time change
and player
like,
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
But I
new stage and stuff changes too. Like the environment feels different. Everything feels a little bit different.
You know? I usually, and especially if it's just at the beginning, take that as a positive sign, you know, because they care that much.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
It didn't feel like it was, you know, a disabling fear or anxiety or anything like that. So it seems in the cases that I heard, we're all kind of like, oh yeah, I was, you know, kind of nervous excitement.
Yeah, and a lot of them afterwards felt more like, oh, thank God, I'm like first one's done. Now we're going to settle thing.
Yeah. All right, let's jump to EG, another one-on-one team, but definitely not an impressive way to get there.
Benny Hill, the team.
Yeah, JoJo had a rough weekend. I mean, it started off hot with his lane against Young where he was turbo clapping in lane, but then he was just dying left, right, and center. You know, they kind of scraped their way by that first win. Then the second game obviously was that monster throw slash comeback slash whatever you want to call it, where they were, you know, 9 to 10K ahead against CLG and did end up dropping that one.
I want to defend JoJo a little bit because it reminds me a little bit of like early Caps when he could get big leads, but then also just like died all the time. If you look at his early KDAs in like 2017, even some of the 2018 season was like two or three. And it was, he would die a lot, but his teams would win and he would generate pressure. And I feel like I think that's what JoJo's trying to do a lot of times. It's just like he gets caught out in really weird positions. And sometimes his team kept growing the lead, especially in the second game where he was getting caught out. But
they're killing a tower elsewhere.
Yeah, and like I want to defend it, but there were enough times where I was like, okay, that one, I don't know what you were doing.
So I actually expected games like this from JoJo because watching Champions Q all last year, I was mind-boggled. It didn't happen more on stage because it's like almost all of his Champions Q games, he's playing to the point of trolling, like, you know, if like the couple of the flips early, you know, work early on, then it's like he demolishes the
10-0, game. 10-0.
It's not even close. You know, it's like absolutely shitting on people. But there were so many games where it was like super troll, you know? And it is this practice mentality that is kind of similar to that. And that's the type of player that he is. I actually really like the comparison to Caps because when
Caps fans don't like, by the way,
I know they're not watching this podcast,
but the Caps fans is part of the reason why I like it, because they are always going to have faith in him, right? Never wavering unless it's like years of bad play, because they'll always embrace the Caps or claps, you know, it's all good, he was just trolling or he was just limit testing or whatever. I feel like that fan, JoJo needs that fan base and that kind of narrative to build up around him too, because that's what coaching staff needs to focus on with him, is trying to eliminate that coming to stage games.
Focus on getting a good meme that everyone can rally around. Yeah. So what's it going to be, JoJo or Bozo?
Getting
Rip Bozo.
No, eliminating and siphoning down those learnings from the practice into not letting it leak onto stage.
And the concern is that it always just keeps leaking and they stay really inconsistent. It's worth noting that they won the split when they were the 9-9 regular season team.
Yeah.
They're number one in goal difference at 15. I think FBI is clearly looking pretty good. Like people were concerned about him stepping in. I still think it's fair to say he's not the insane pop-off late game player that Danny was, but his Jhin game was pretty good. I was pretty happy with him overall. Someday looked fine. Inspired, still like the nastiest Sejuani you've ever seen. Just like, I forget what it was, like 7-kill game he had this time.
He was smurfing. His Elise game was actually really good early too.
Yeah, Inspired's still crazy.
He's amazing. My big concern for this team is kind of like just where is like gonna the voice gonna come from for mid game and late game and stuff? I feel like, and this is like totally anecdotal and just like you can't, it's not scientific,
no
but
impact.
It's like if impact was in that second game, do they win? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they have the voice with that 10K lead that Impact's like, do this, and then we win. And then they do it, and then it's clean. Everyone's like, God damn, that was a slap, right? Like, they went full early game, everyone went late game, but only EG can do it. Let's go. They're the best team in the league. You know, like, how different of a story is it if that cliff never happens? If they hit the 10K lead, they quickly clean it up. So, like, that's one of those things that's hard to know. You know, like, is that, like, that missing voice? Because I know, you know, talking to them, they did say that they're kind of trying to work on that, and they're trying to, like, you know, build up more voices and have Inspired, you know, take up some of that role and stuff as well. But that's something that can definitely take some time, I think.
Yeah, that's why with rating that team, I was like, I think people are too quickly using Someday and Impact as interchangeable, and we'll see about what types of effects that has on the team.
All right, moving on to another team that needs some time to get together, Team Liquid, because yikes, that was not a great weekend. I don't know how you guys felt. They still had some early game leads in the TSM one that they bungled.
You don't know how we felt?
I assume everyone didn't feel good. I don't know how bad you felt. The FlyQuest game, I swear to God, I'm doing a blame game on this, but like, it was maybe the worst Herald swap you'll see all year. It was like 8 minutes, just punted the game away in the first game versus FlyQuest. And then they made some bad plays afterwards, but it was because they put themselves so far behind.
Yeah, I was watching the Team Liquid games this weekend. I was like, you were working overtime for this? You were doing triple blocks and extra
screens?
Everyone
told me you guys were great. This does not look great.
After this, that's what these, you know, 16-hour workdays have produced.
The positive thing I'll say is in the second game, both Yon and Harry impressed me at different points. I thought there was a team fight on Akali where Harry looked incredible, where like he does this fat flanker because the previous one he went in too soon or something. Mm-hmm. And he like protobelt R1 E onto someone, takes the E2, like just like super clean to assassinate tactical, which he needed to do. And he was basically playing without a top laner, no offense to Summit, but like he never had Meganar when he needed it. And like, it was a disaster of a team comp. And like Yon and him both looked pretty good in that situation, where I feel like the people I'm most disappointed in right now are actually Pioshik a little bit, but way more Summit, who I think has looked as bad as when he was bustering out of the LCS.
And those are two fears that I feel like were already existing in at least the backs of people's minds, because you mentioned Summit, you know, and getting flamed a whole bunch for when he left the LCS and getting spam ganked and turned from MVP into LVP. Yeah. And then Pioshik was by far the most flamed person on DRX for sure. One of the most flamed, you know, in the league overall. Just everybody's loved always, you know, lumping it on him. And so people are very ready if there's bad games in LCS to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, is this the world champion, you know, that we're getting?
Yeah.
Because there have been lots of horror stories of imports that don't work out like that.
I was really disappointed in Summit. That was like the biggest disappointment for me by far, just because I felt like, yeah, it literally felt like we were just transported back to their playoff run, where he was just kind of making a lot of the same mistakes. You know, he had a great early lane on the Gnar. He ends up 1-6. You know, he had a 0.8 KDA across the two games, which is like not it, obviously. It's not KDA doesn't really matter that much, but like, let's be honest, he had a lot of dumb deaths.
He was just dying in weird places. He was like jumping on the Azir underneath the turret as the other team had an inside track on him anyways. So yeah, like, even though he got doinked by the arrow and it was a great shot by Chime, he was still like behind enemy lines for no reason.
Yeah, without like any vision on top side, he was playing past the tier one tower, it felt like, a couple times.
Yeah.
And you know, it felt like people just kind of picked up on that, and it's like, oh yeah, you just gank Summit. You just go to Summit and you get free kill, right? It kind of, that Gnar game started to feel like that, which is really concerning. Because it, you know, I had felt like he had kind of learned from that experience somewhat. Of course, you know, TL does need some time, and I know that they are looking at themselves, I think, more as like a summer split team because of the rookies, but it didn't feel like it was the rookies. I actually felt like Harry had a really good weekend.
Yep.
I felt like he was almost the biggest standout player in some of his plays. I thought he was playing out some of the team fights and stuff really well. So they did still have some good moments and stuff, but there was some definite like miscommunication moments or poor coordination moments. There was some kind of like bumbled moments. I think back to that Vi force on mid lane where he like, I it was he Vault Breakers to get in range. So he Qs to get in range, then ult, so he doesn't have his Q to do damage on the Azir. Then Harry throws his Syndra stun before the Vial lands. It gets flashed, so he doesn't have that combo. Then, like, you know, they're under a tower and stuff, and he has to flash away. And I think Piotr ends up dying, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, because Spica comes in and
kills him. But there was just a few moments like that where I'm like, were you guys really on the same page? Like, was this communicated well? Was that like what was going on here?
It felt like tilt at that point because they just hadn't made a play yet, and they were against triple scaling lanes, and like they were. Doomed if they didn't do anything. So like, it's one of those plays where I'm like, the more concerning thing for me is how'd you get 15 minutes in and that's your first vial, more than like,
yeah,
then that was a terrible play, because it was a terrible play. But
just even the coordination though, right? Because yeah. It's like, if you're going to vial first, you need to scatter out of that, so it's a guaranteed Syndra stun and they can full combo.
Yeah, I mean, it was, they were never going to kill him. I think maybe they're just trying to go flash for flash, and then the fact that Spica was there killed him or something, because yeah. Otherwise he just flashes out and you go mid for jungle. But I mean, obviously the game was a travesty, and this is a team that I'm not ready to fully write off yet, and you just hope it's a bumpy start. But they, of all the top five teams that I'm like, have the chance to win a championship, I'm easily the most scared of, more than EG or 100 Thieves or anyone else.
We just keep parroting the hard work story.
Well, and to be fair to the hard work thing, they haven't had that much time, right? So like, the benefits of that are going to come throughout the month.
That's why we're going to keep parroting it.
Yeah.
Well, Good job, parrot.
Yeah. Well, I've just seen some people online like memeing it already. Like, oh, I thought you were working hard. You're trash, right? You know, it's like, well,
because that's
give them some time.
That's how memeing works. As soon as you can, you jump on there.
I feel like it's so easy to tell the difference between lighthearted memes and not. I feel like for the most part, Team Liquid post-game threads were mostly funny memes about the whole like Piotrczyk's going to retire, which was hilarious.
That was really funny. I love how they leaned into that, by the way.
Yeah. It sucks that he lost the second game, because then it actually feels bad. But the first response was like, oh, I love Piotrczyk. And then
got to
like,
come up with a third name. Yeah. Goodbye, Mark. Okay, now I'm...
Welcome, Bob.
Yeah. And then the CLG post-game threads are really funny, too. They were just having a great time memeing about their team being slept on.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, TL clearly wanted to do a lot of early game stuff. They did Double Lucian Nami. They did, you know, Syndra. They did like a Vi. Yeah. They did a lot of kind of early game focus type things. So we'll see what their adjustments are for week two. But sky is not falling just yet, but definitely a really bad week for TL, and especially for a team that I think, especially you wanted the veteran pieces to come in and look really good. It would have been, people would be less concerned if it was like, ooh, Harry and Jan really messed up a couple of those team fights. Yeah. And like, but like some of Piotrczyk and Core, they're looking clean, right? So it's definitely more concerning. But exciting first week overall. Really, really enjoyed it. And I'm actually really excited for the second week also, because I still have so many questions about these teams. Mm-hmm. A lot of really cool rosters. But I think that's about it for this episode of The Dive. We're going to wrap it up. Remember, if you are watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button on YouTube so you don't miss an episode of The Dive. Thank you everyone for tuning in for the first one. Got a bunch of views on that, so that was great. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and make sure you keep sending us the questions on Twitter, #TheDiveLOL. That's how we find them. If you're not responding to like a question tweet, that's
how we
find
them. If you send enough hot takes, do we do a hot take game again?
Yep, keep sending the hot takes. That was a lot of fun. Thanks everyone for that. And if you send in Anchor.fm questions, please make sure you have the microphone on. Our producer got a 2-minute file with no audio. You were muted. What are you doing? Get it together.
Someone leave him a 24-hour one where you just leave it on, you walk away.
He just keeps listening. You're just hoping that there's some audio.
There is
later.
Like a little audio of like background cat noises or something.
Sounds good. All right.
Intentional butt dial.
Yeah. LCS Spring continues this Thursday with CLG versus Cloud9. See if CLG can maintain the momentum versus the reigning champs Thursday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. EST. We'll see you there. Have a good one.